Aya Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Second canto, second chapter, third verse. Atap kavi namasu
namasu
yava
yava
atta
syat
syat
pramato
pramato yavasaya
yavasaya
vi
vi
siddhe
nyatate
nyatate
He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. Responsibly. For this reason, the enlightened person, should endeavor only. For the minimum necessities of life. While in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed. And never endeavor for unwanted things. Being competent to perceive practically. That all such endeavors. Are merely hard labor for nothing. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Bhagavad Dharma, or the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, is perfectly distinct from the way of fruitive activities, which are considered by the devotees to be merely a waste of time. The whole universe, or for that matter, all material existence, is moving on as jagat, simply for planning business, to make one's position very comfortable or secure, although everyone sees that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization, following the way of phantasmagoria, are certainly madmen. The whole material creation is a jugglery of names. Jugglery of names is in italics. Jugglery of names only. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter, like earth, water, and fire. The buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are all simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions of the three modes. Since the devotee of the Lord knows them perfectly well, he's not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significance than the babble of sea waves. The great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. Read that again. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. The fruitive worker aspires after a big fortune in the matter of wealth, woman, and worldly adoration. But those who are fixed in perfect reality are not at all interested in such false things. For them, it is all a waste of time. Since every second of human life is important, an enlightened man should be very careful to utilize time very cautiously. 1 second of human life wasted in the vain research of planning for happiness in the material world can never be replaced, even if one spends millions of coins of gold. Therefore, the transcendentalist desiring freedom from the clutches of Maya or the illusory activities of life is warned herewith not to be captivated by the external features of fruitive actors. Human life is never meant for sense gratification, but for self-realization. Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us solely on this subject from the very beginning to the end. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. The civilization which aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. And such a perfect civilization prepares men only to accept the bare necessities of life or to follow the principle of the best use of a bad bargain. Our material bodies and our lives in that connection are bad bargains because the living entity is actually spirit, and spiritual advancement of the living entity is absolutely necessary. Human life is intended for the realization of this important factor, and one should act accordingly, accepting only the bare necessities of life and depending more on God's gift without diversion of human energy for any other purpose, such as being mad for material enjoyment. The materialistic advancement of civilization is called, quote, the civilization of the demons, end quote, which ultimately ends in wars and scarcity. The transcendentalist is specially warned herewith to be fixed in mind, so that even if there is difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from his stark determination. For a transcendentalist, it is a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world, because such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. Shukadeva Goswami met Maharaj Parikshit when the latter felt a necessity for such a meeting. It is the duty of a transcendentalist to help persons who desire real salvation and to support the cause of salvation. One might note that Shukadeva Goswami never met Maharaj Parikshit while he was ruling as a great king. For a transcendentalist, the mode of activities is explained in the next shloka. Om Agnatimirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurunlitam Jena Tatmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Chena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam. Lord Chaitanya recommended that Srimad Bhagavatam be read constantly, not that it should just be read occasionally and certain parts of it relegated to the memory, but that it should be kind of like a bath that has to be taken every day. Srimad Bhagavatam should be read every day because it is purifying to the consciousness and it is the ultimate narration of the spotless Purana, that which can cleanse the heart and the mind. So Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya means that it is important to hear Bhagavatam constantly, every day, so that one can live by the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is actually the manual for helping us to enable us to maneuver through the material world in such a way that we don't become victimized by the material energy, which is very powerful and very all-encompassing and all-embracing to the people that live in this age of Kali. So it is said, Atakavir Namasu Yavadarta, for this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life. Prabhupada taught that it is unnecessary to eat with fork and spoon, it is unnecessary to sit in a chair, it is unnecessary to sleep in a bed, it is unnecessary to have a huge wardrobe, with some people have hundreds of pairs of shoes, more than they can decide what to do, how to wear, or to have infinite varieties of foodstuffs, or different types of enjoyment. These are not the minimum necessities. Actually, there are many fabrications that are not necessity for life. For example, we have the cosmetic industry. We have the soft drink industry. We have a number of intoxicants. And you can see that even in this area where people are fairly well-to-do, they're growing grapes to make wine, or they're growing horses to race, or they're growing animals to slaughter. There are many things that are unnecessary. There's a book written called The Unreality Industry. Prabhupada once cited the example of Coca-Cola as being a perfect example of a useless product. He usually didn't name any products by name, but he happened to name this particular one, because for many decades, this has been a product that has been marketed all over the world. And basically, it's a kind of sugary water. They say that there are about 6 or 7 teaspoons of white sugar, or the equivalent thereof, in every, 12-ounce can of soft drinks. And this is person who currently runs this company is very fond of talking about the great love affair that people have with this product. It's not that people are, of course it is true, that people are spontaneously attracted to certain things which are unnecessary, but it's also the habit of the marketeers of products like this to force people to become attracted to them. Once the Japanese head of McDonald's was interviewed, I happened to see this interview, and he said that generally in Japan, this was about maybe 15 years ago, we're not interested in meat in general. So he said that their marketing technique was that they had to, these were his exact words, we have to force them to eat the hamburgers. So when this chain of burgers started in Japan, people actually had to be forced, according to their marketing strategy, to take them. So this is the meaning of unnecessary products. And many of the cosmetics and detergents and various types of products that are in the market are products of the animal industry. It's called the rendering industry. And the rendering industry is as big an industry as is the meat industry, because no part of any animal killed, whether it be a pig or a chicken or a cow or a goat or a sheep,
is wasted. It all goes into some industry. And a recent article in the New York Times cataloged the prices of various parts of animals, the hooves, the eyelids, the tongue, the skin, the various parts that were used, and not only in cosmetics but in pharmaceuticals, very widely used, and very expensive, very, very expensive. And even human fetuses parts are sometimes used for cosmetics to make the skin appear very fresh and young and very bright and vibrant and so on. So there's so many unnecessary products like Coca-Cola, lipstick, and so many, many, many others that are huge industries and that people feel they are necessities of life. They have to have them. They have to have their soft drinks. They have to have their cosmetics. The Bhagavatam says one should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. Being calm to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. And this is also described in the Bhagavatam, that generally people are working very hard for nothing. We see them going up and down on the motorways very fast, all day and night. And sometimes we wonder where they're going, what they're doing, why they're rushing, what is the big hurry. In some cities, they have a big motorway that goes around the city in a circular fashion, like in London. They have the London Circular Road. They have the Washington Beltway. And it's kind of symbolic that it's going around in a big circle and doesn't seem to be really going anywhere special. And the big trucks are rumbling down these big motorways, sometimes for hundreds or thousands of miles. And an intelligent person can't help wondering, where are they going? What are they doing? What is the hurry? Or in the airports and the train stations of the world. Thousands of people every day are going in airplanes and trains and buses. And where are they going? And what are they all doing? What is this big travel industry? What are the needs to see something a little different? To see a different mountain or a different lake or a cloud or a different tree? That's all. So many, many things that people think they need. And it's not uncommon that people that are wealthy have huge wardrobes and they can't decide what to wear from one day to the next. So in Kali Yuga we have this phenomenon of an artificial civilization. Pharmaceuticals and weapons are the two biggest industries in the world, legal and illegal pharmaceuticals. And the head of one of the biggest drug companies in the world has the opinion that just by taking a tablet one can duplicate, one will be able to exactly replicate an experience such as snow skiing or swimming or standing by a lake, that by taking a drug, these kind of thoughts will enter the mind and the same sense of smell and the feeling will be there. And this is actually a conviction of the owner of one of the biggest drug companies in the world. This is what the future vision of the world will be. So one will not only wish for experiences and things that are necessary, but simply by taking a tablet or a capsule, one can get those feelings. And this is even beginning now. There are certain states that one can get into, they call it altered states of consciousness, by taking certain kinds of tablets, that one can feel very relaxed or very happy, or one can take an aphrodisiac. And now they have full-page ads in it. I saw on the airplane in Time magazine for Viagra. It makes men very virile, even in their older age. And several people already, I don't know how many, but it's more than 10 or 20 or 30, have died from taking this drug. And it is used by the counterculture, the subculture, as a recreational high also. Very easy to get. So many things are being made in this world. And it's called, therefore, Prabhupada reiterates that it is the world of names that we're living in. And as the Bhagavatam says, it is a world of names. That the meaning of this is that in the material world, the name of the thing and the thing are different. The name of car and car are different. Floor, the name and the substance floor are different. So substance and shadow. The name is like the shadow. The substance is the real thing. The real thing is this now been made into an ad. The real thing is not the real thing, actually. It's sugar water. The real thing. They have this slogan here for Coca-Cola, the real thing. But the real, I mean, it shows how, with a lot of endeavor, a huge amount of endeavor. People have gotten degrees in psychology. They've sat together. They've been paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to sit together, to work very hard day and night to figure this out. This slogan, the real thing, is what's going to make people drink sugar water. But for those who are transcendentalists and have the sense that the real thing is something more than a soft drink, they understand that there is something more to life, what Prabhupada calls the bare necessities, the realities of life. We have to eat a certain amount, we have to sleep a certain amount every day, and whether we sleep in a huge bed with a big mattress and a big canopy over it, or in 6 square feet of space on a little padded floor, whether we eat thousands of different varieties of things every month, or eat maybe 20 or 30 different varieties of things, we're still eating the same amount. We can't eat past a certain amount. We can't sleep in more than 6 feet of space. We can live in a palace or we can live in a single room, but we're still getting shelter from the wind and the rain and the snow and the bad weather and the sun. And whether one has dozens of mates or a single mate, it is all for the same purpose. It's all for the same pleasure, same basic enjoyment. So many artificial necessities have been created, and this is the world of names, because the name is different from the thing. And in the spiritual world, the name of God, the name of the paraphernalia associated with Krishna is the same. So it begins with Krishna. Krishna has the power to create. Just by thinking, something comes into existence. Simply by uttering a word, something comes into existence. So unlike anything that we might desire in the material world, we can repeat a name, but we will have to work very hard to get that thing. But to get the association of devotees and to get Krishna, we simply have to utter the name of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And immediately, Krishna is present. This is the unique prerogative of Krishna consciousness. The unique prerogative of the age of Kali. The unique prerogative of Lord Chaitanya having come only 500 years ago, once in a day, of Brahma. He comes because he gives us this very rare gift that he can become present immediately. And even if we don't see the deity of Krishna, we can, by carrying out his mission, by reciting his name, we can actually feel his presence. So Prabhupada said, you'll be surprised to learn Sri Krishna Namadi, that Krishna can be realized first and foremost through the tongue, through tasting the holy name, through tasting prasada. Taksmi Sri Krishna Namadi. Nalavedrayam Indriya. It's very amazing, actually, that simply by uttering a certain sound that one can have the presence of Krishna. This is the miracle of Krishna consciousness. We can say anything else, Coca-Cola or whatever, and we won't get the taste, we won't get it. But to utter the name of Krishna, Krishna is immediately there. So another point in this verse is that people work very hard, like we see in these motorways, or in the big office buildings. Everyone is working very hard. They're rushing about. They're sitting at their desk. They're checking off a list of things to do. And at the end of the day, they feel satisfied. Well, they've done their things. Now they can go home and enjoy. This is called Swadharma, or executing one's prescribed duties. But if these duties, as it is said in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, the second chapter, 8th verse, if these activities that are engaged in constantly by devotees, or Svadharma activities, do not provoke an attraction to the personality of Godhead, they are only so much useless labor. It's just working hard like animals for nothing. You see these cows out in the field, they're just all day chewing on grass. Even people draw pictures of cows, their faces are always down in the grass. They're constantly nibbling on grass, constantly. That's what they're doing. And that's andamoya. It's the first stage of existence, of consciousness. And like the little babies, they're always sucking their thumb. They're very orally fixated, they call it. And birds, you know, they're running around looking for worms in the ground or some little scraps of grain seed. And they're always looking this way and that way. Is someone coming to kill me? And the little birds that are foraging in the sea waves, where the little waves lap on the beach, they're running back and forth to get a few little living entities to eat out of the water. And they're always looking around. They're always running. afraid that they're going to be caught or killed or run after at any moment by a bigger bird or a human being or an animal. So everyone is, whether humans or non-humans, they're working very hard just to eat. Just to eat. And that's what these people are doing when they're racing around in their cars and they're sitting there. They're just thinking they have to work very hard so they can eat. So they can have sex. So they can, you know, have a few hours in the weekend of enjoyment. So they can go home and spend 4 or 5 hours in front of the tube and feel very happy. See all the beautiful color or surf the web in their computer. They're just working very hard for all these things. So in this way, human beings are compared to animals. It's called useless labor. Just like working very hard, like the ass. And Prabhupada gives the example of the elephant who eats so many tens of kilos of grain or wood or straw every day. And it's never short of food. So people are working hard unnecessarily to acquire things which are not necessary. This is their preconceived notion. And then they're so puffed up, people are. They're so arrogant that if they're scientists, for example, and they discover something, they name it after themselves. Like Darwin or Boyle's Law of Gases or something, Heidegger's Cat, was it? That's his name. Is there another one? Newton's Law. Everything is named after somebody. So everyone wants to take the credit. But what is it, as Prabhupada is mentioning, everything that we see, it is given to us by God. We're just assembling the material. Earth, water, air, ether, fire, all these. We saw a brick place out on the road somewhere. Murawai Brick Factory or some brick factory. Like, it's got their name after it. But it's actually just something that God gave us. So everything that exists, all the buildings, all the houses, all of the industry, it's all, even the very highfalutin designer drugs, even aspirin, it's made from a plant. All the essential ingredients taken from a plant. People that study naturopathy know this. So everything is given originally by God to us, and then we put different names on it. We've taken a little bit here and a little bit there, and we've tried to make it essential. We've tried to make it something that is our own, that is given by us, that is the creation of a human being rather than by God. That is what's called Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. If our activity doesn't provoke attraction for the personality of Godhead, it's so much useless labor. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to not to stop our svadharma or to not do what we ordinarily do, but to do it for Krishna. And then Prabhupada mentions here that it's suicidal. It's a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world. Sangha Tyaga, one is advised by Rupa Goswami to give up that kind of association, intimate association. It doesn't mean that one can't associate, because we have to preach. But to associate intimately, Prabhupada uses the word suicidal. A very strong word. Now, when we look around us, we see, I mean, one way we can look at, there's all this construction going on. There's a lot of digging going on. So one vision of humankind is that people are digging, they're piling up the stuff, and it's being, the earth, and it's being taken away. So the existence of a human being is kind of like that. It's like digging, piling, taking away, digging, piling, and taking away. They're not actually making any spiritual progress. Just coming into the world, living like an animal, having some offspring, dwindling, dying, getting reborn again, going through the same process of digging, piling up, and taking away. If the sangha, if the association is with those kinds of people, if there's intimate association with people who are simply digging, piling, and taking away, or trying to accumulate unwanted things, huge wardrobes and nicer cars and better houses and boats and airplanes, better vacations and bigger families and more things, unwanted things, then we're going to become like them. And if we associate with devotees, sadhusanga, then we have just the opposite effect. We have the effect of thinking that there are essential things in life which should provoke attraction for the personality of Godhead. And our main focus, our main thought should not be on how to get a better this or a better that or more this or more that, but how to become more intimately associated with the Supreme Lord, how to think about Krishna at all times, how to become more spiritual, how to become purified in mind and heart. And that is actually the purpose of human life. How to forego those things which are not going to aid me in my Krishna consciousness. How to accept those things which are going to help me. How to feel protected by the Lord at all times. How to accept the Lord's mercy at all times. How to always maintain an attitude of humility. Actually, one of the things that Prabhupada told one of his godbrothers, Obio Kapoor, you might have heard of him, was a long time ago, I mean before Prabhupada went to the West, around about 1930, He said that someday I will go to the West. And we saw in the video of Acharam how Prabhupada in his school days, when he was in his early 20s, said, someday I will fight against the British in my own way. So, all we know, the poor heard this from Prabhupada, that he was someday going to go to the West, he was going to preach Krishna consciousness. And he said, how will you do that? How can you possibly go to the very materialistic West and preach to them and make them Krishna conscious? So Prabhupada told Mr. Kapoor, we spoke with Mr. Kapoor, he told us this a couple of years ago, he said, well, I have a secret formula. Prabhupada was in the pharmaceutical business himself. He said, I have a secret formula. And well, what is that secret formula? Will be able to ask him. He said, well, I'll tell you in due course, but not right now. When Prabhupada came back, after he had maintained the attitude of Trinada Bhisni, Chena, being humble more than the blade of grass, tolerant more than the tree. And this, he said, was the reason that he was able to progress in Krishna consciousness. And for his movement to expand. So this is, of course, one of the elements of surrender. One has to be humble. Prabhupada speaks of the materialistic advancement of civilization as the civilization of demons. The Pope calls it the culture of death, the Western civilization. I think Gandhi was asked once about, what do you think of Western civilization? He said, I think it's a good idea. So what goes under the name of civilization is really not civilization, but it's animal civilization. So as an aspiring transcendentalist, one should be acutely aware that we are moving about in a civilization that's not really civilized. If a civilized person, a truly civilized person, realizes that this is not the true place for a human being to live, it is in the spiritual world. And all denizens of the spiritual world, or all those who are aspirants of the spiritual world, have great compassion. They are feeling the pinch of material nature on everybody, in everybody's skin and everybody's back. And therefore they're working very hard to alleviate the suffering. Lord Chaitanya's principal purpose was to come here, was to alleviate the suffering and to drown everyone in love of Godhead. So this is a great legacy that we've inherited from Srila Prabhupada, that we should work hard for self-realization, understand that we're living in a world of names only, a civilization which is aiming at imperfection, and that our duty is to set things aright, is to bring that civilization to true civilization. So we'll stop there if you have any comments or questions. One thing Prabhupada mentions, it worked very hard. And people realize that they're getting old, that they can't recoup time past for any amount of money. It's one of Chanakya's shlokas also. Not one second can be regained. That's further explained in the Bhagavatam. That ayurharati vaipam sam ujanas pranchayana, so that with every rising of the sun, with every setting of the sun, one loses one's valuable life. But if one is fixed in glorifying the name of the Lord, one is not affected by such rising and setting of the sun. Therefore, to read Srimad Bhagavatam gives us eternal life. I know that sounds very Christian, but actually it's what the soul is. The soul is eternal. And to concentrate on the soul and its relationship with Krishna, one, as Srila Prabhupada showed us, can work very hard in propagating Krishna consciousness, even up into old age, and not become dejected and think life is hopeless. So, any thoughts? That's a very basic verse. Yes, Balaram.
I had another, I read it in one of Sasar of some Kurdish commentaries, you're a chemist, you have to give the formula for love of God. Prabhupada said to reply, he says, yes, he says, but I have the formula, but I don't know how to mix it yet. So what is that? And then he told him that Trinada Bhisni Chena was.
It shows how important humility is. We heard Prabhupada on a tape once, he was interviewed on the radio, and people phoned in and they asked questions, so
One lady, I heard this tape, was very, very challenging. She said, straight off, where is your so-called, she said, so-called temple? He said, it's in the Dashbury. Oh, that hippie area. And how do you get your money? Well, my disciples, they donate to the cause and give various things. And she went on and on like that. And she finally she said, oh, so I understand now you're a freeloader. You know what a freeloader is? It's like a bum. And Prabhupada, yeah, I didn't see it, but I heard the state, he just said, yes. Kind of, yes. Very proud that he was advertised to nothing. And all of a sudden she just stopped. And the person who was in charge of the station that was doing the interview said, oh, I'm going to punch her out. And then he was going to stop because he sided with Prabhupada that, yes, of course, he was accepting so many things. But Prabhupada was never, you could tell by his tone of voice, that he was never agitated. Even though in the very start, this lady started out in a very challenging, very inimical tone and voice, and she was that way through the whole thing, and Prabhupada was never once flustered or in any way showed anything other than absolute humility. And at the end, when she called him a bad name, he just accepted it so graciously that it took all the venom, sort of the venomous sound of her and mentality, it just took it all away, just as the humility was so powerful that it removed all of the vitriol, all the rancor that was, sort of accumulating in her, it seemed. And certainly the people who were listening. So that formula works. Here he was, he wasn't working, he had a temple, he had lots of followers, he had all the things he needed to promote Krishna consciousness, and here was an envious person, and Prabhupada just completely disarmed him by his humility, because he deserved all those things.
Yes. So it's easy to talk about it, but how do you do it?
Yeah, it's easy to talk about, very difficult to do, because it's one of the principles of surrender, and surrendering is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to accept everything favorable and to reject everything favorable and to always feel protected by Krishna, always feel Krishna's mercy. These are very difficult things. It's a difficult process, but because we saw that Prabhupada had it, and because we're following what he asked us to do, we're engaged in that process of surrendering. And surrendering is not something that happens overnight. It's not an easy thing to do. It happens with the whole mind, the whole self. And it's a process. It's not a product. It's something that we have to do step by step, just like the journey of Krishna consciousness. It has to start somewhere, and every journey has to start with a step. So we begin, and we're praying. We're praying for the mercy of Krishna all the time, that we'll be able to attain that state. It's certainly a very elevated state that Prabhupada was on. But we're very fortunate to be able to understand what love of God is and to let it rub off on us and to learn from Srila Prabhupada, to develop gradually that spontaneous sense of always remembering, always falling, of loving Krishna, actually. It's what it really means. When someone's in love, they're what we use the word infatuated. They make fools of themselves for their lover. But if one makes a fool of oneself for Krishna, one is actually not a loser. One becomes in love with Krishna. It's not foolish, but it's actually the perfect position. So we have to try, we just have to keep trying and executing all the different forms of devotional service that karma provides. We have so many mentors, like Rupa Goswami and the whole disciple succession, so many devotees to help us, and so many nice books, many great elevated souls whose lifestyles and decisions we can follow. We just have to begin. And even if we remain neophytes for a long time, if we try, we'll surely succeed. We just have to keep going. Bleak as it may sometimes seem. Prabhupada once said that Krishna consciousness, I heard this from Lochanadas, so I can't say I heard it firsthand, but he said that Krishna consciousness is a system of recreation, singing, dancing, feasting, and glorifying God. So that's actually what goes on in the spiritual world. They're singing, they're dancing, feasting, whatever they do, they're very blissful. That's our aspiration. Sashi.
Talking about humility, but we are also told that as preachers we shouldn't talk blasphemy to devotees and so how does that in that context?
Yeah, like Arjuna, he was being persuaded to become angry by Krishna to execute his fighting dharma. In general though, Prabhupada says that we are ahimsa, we're non-violent people, and that is one of our that's one of the qualities of a Brahmin, is to be very very peaceful, very tolerant, very clean, and that is the mood actually of a devotee. But because in a highly exceptional situation, Arjuna was to carry out his svadharma, which was, you know, not a very adorable thing. There has to be police force, there has to be military, there have to be people to protect, and in order to do that, they have to use force. So, and since anger is an integral part of the living entity, it's actually part of Krishna, because it comes from Krishna. Sometimes it has to manifest, and if it has to be, Krishna arranged so many things. He arranged for his own devotees to become demons so he could fight with them, because there's no fighting that actually goes on. It doesn't go on in the spiritual world. It only goes on in the material world. But if that, and it is described that anger is a product of becoming attached to material things and not getting our sense gratification satisfied. So generally, it's not recommended. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that it's not good. We fall down in the material pool. But if our occupation is one of protecting religious principles and the holy name is blasphemed, then one can invoke the principle of anger to stop it. But in Kali Yuga, particularly in Kali Yuga, even that is not generally recommended, because in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya came, and when he was going to perpetrate violence upon Jagai Madai, he was stopped by Nityananda Prabhu, and he convinced him that the real astra is the shastra, and that the mercy of the Lord is more important than the law of what is right and wrong. So in Kali Yuga, the Kazi, for example, was persuaded by Lord Chaitanya by friendly talks. Of course, he was afraid of him because he showed the great force of a 1 lakh strong of men, 100,000 men going out with their torches, and he was frightened. But actually, they had a very civil discussion. So, and that, of course, is a very holy place still, that place of the Kazi Chan. It's considered to be a Tirtha, because Lord Chaitanya spoke the Shastra. So Lord Chaitanya's presence in Kali Yuga is that we engage in this process of preaching with humility and use the Shastra generally as our weapon. I mean, there have been instances where devotees have been attacked, and of course there are six means recommended in the purport of Bhagavad Gita when one can engage in violence, especially in self-defense, and it has sometimes happened. But generally a devotee has to learn to be very tolerant and give respect. The anger and the violence aspects are minimized, particularly in Nityakali. Lord Chaitanya was the embodiment of the flood of love of God that would envelop everyone, even those who are very stone-hearted. There was one devotee, he was one of the servants of Satsang Maharaj, was on Oxford Street, and he saw the devotees go by. And the very first thing he did was he kicked one of the devotees in the leg. But because he had an attraction for the holy name, he eventually became a very good devotee. So humility has its virtues, has its very strong place in Age of Kali. Some missions teach martial arts, and then those who are practicing martial arts, they become devotees. And part of Washington, D.C., they do that. They have martial arts instructors who are devotees, and then their students become devotees. They become, you know, very humble by nature. But of course, if they're attacked or they have to protect devotees, then especially we're supposed to protect those who are incapable of, being like little children, women, Brahmins, cows, can't protect themselves. Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Bhagavatam, Kijaya, Shiva Prabhupada, Kijaya.